A History of the Black Panther Party by the Marxists Internet Archive. In October of 1966, in Oakland, California, Huey Newton and Bobby Seale founded the Black Panther Party for self-defense. The Panthers practiced militant self-defense of minority communities against the U.S. government and fought to establish revolutionary socialism through mass organizing and community programs. The party was one of the first organizations in U.S. history to militantly struggle for ethnic minority and working class emancipation. A party whose agenda was the revolutionary establishment of real economic, social, and political equality across gender and color lines.
The Black Panther Party is a political party, and that we have a political platform and definitely a political aim. Our aims and goals are liberation of the black community, freedom of the black community, and in short, political power of the black people, which we don't have at this point.
Now, you know, it seems to me that what you're asking for is revolutionary change.
Yes, before you have any change, first black people have to gain political power. And we haven't ever gained anything by the capitalistic system. Free enterprise and capitalism has only been destructive to black people, and we're demanding a drastic change, a revolutionary change. Within our platform, it's explained that man has a right to live, and to live, he's going to have to provide for himself and his family. So therefore, it's up to the administrators to provide him with work. The Black Panther Party demands full housing, decent housing, rather, that's fit for human beings to live in. We demand full employment. But as far as what are we going to do about this? And that if people are afraid, I don't believe that they're really afraid of guns. If it was really so, if the majority of them were afraid of guns, then they would demand that their armed forces be disarmed, and that their police officer, which is actually the local army, be disarmed, and the National Guard be disarmed. But they only become afraid when the victim starts arming himself. And in a political fashion. And as far as the demands that we say and how we go about this, as far as the power that we're going to develop, that we are developing, I think is in keeping with all colonized people. And we are colonized people. We always have been.
Black Panther theory. The practices of the late Malcolm X were deeply rooted in the theoretical foundations of the Black Panther Party. Malcolm had represented both a militant revolutionary with the dignity and self-respect to stand up and fight to win equality for all oppressed minorities, while also being an outstanding role model, someone who sought to bring about positive social services. Something the Black Panthers would take to new heights. The Panthers followed Malcolm's belief of international working class unity across the spectrum of color and gender, and thus united with various minority and white revolutionary groups. From the tenets of Maoism, they set the role of their party as the vanguard of the revolution and worked to establish a united front. While from Marxism, they addressed the capitalist economic system, embraced the theory of dialectical materialism, and represented the need for all workers to forcefully take over the means of production. Black Panther History. On April 25th, 1967, the first issue of The Black Panther, the party's official news organ, goes into distribution. In the following month, the party marches on the California state capitol, fully armed, in protest of the state's attempt to outlaw carrying loaded weapons in public. Bobby Seale reads a statement of protest, while the police respond by immediately arresting him and all 30 armed Panthers. This early act of political repression kindles the fires to the burning resistance movement in the United States, soon initiating minority workers to take up arms and form new Panther chapters outside the state. In October of 1967, the police arrest the defense minister of the Panthers, Huey Newton, for killing an Oakland cop. Panther Eldridge Cleaver begins the movement to free Huey, a struggle the Panthers would devote a great deal of their attention to in the coming years, while the party spreads its roots further into the political spectrum, forming coalitions with various revolutionary parties. Stokely Carmichael, the former chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and a nationally known proponent of black power, is recruited into the party through the struggle and soon becomes the party's prime minister in February 1968. Carmichael is adamantly against allowing whites into the black liberation movement, explaining whites cannot relate to the black experience and have an intimidating effect on blacks, a position that stirs opposition within the Panthers. Carmichael explains, "Whites who come into the black community with ideas of change seem to want to absolve the power structure of its responsibility for what it is doing, and say that change can only come through black unity, which is the worst kind of paternalism. If we are to proceed toward true liberation, we must cut ourselves off from white people. Otherwise, we will find ourselves entwined in the tentacles of the white power complex that controls this country."
I will not deny that poor whites in this country are oppressed, but there are two types of oppression. One is exploitation, the other is colonization, and we have to understand the difference between both of them. Exploitation is when you exploit somebody of your own race. Colonization is when you exploit somebody of a different race. We are colonized. They are exploited. They are exploited. Now let us explain how the process of exploitation and colonization works. If I am black and I am exploiting you who are also black, we have the same values, the same culture, the same language, the same society, the same institutions. So I do not have to destroy those institutions for you. But if you are of another race, if you have a different culture, different language, different values, I have to destroy all of those to make you bow to me. And that is the difference between poor blacks and poor whites. Poor whites have their culture, have their values, have their institutions. Ours have been completely destroyed. Completely destroyed. Completely destroyed. So when you talk about alliances, you recognize with people who are trying to rebuild their culture, trying to rebuild their history, trying to rebuild their dignity, people who are fighting for their humanity. Poor white people are not fighting for their humanity, they're fighting for more money. There are a lot of poor white people in this country. You ain't seen none of them rebel yet, have you? Why is it that black people are rebelling? Do you think it's because it's just poor jobs? Don't believe that junk that hunky is running down. It's not poor jobs. It's a question of a people finding their culture, their nature, and fighting for their humanity. For their humanity. For their humanity. For their humanity. We have been so colonized that we are ashamed to say we hate. And that is the best example of a person who's colonized. You sit in your house, a hunky walks in your house, beats you up, rapes your wife, beat up your child, and you don't have the humanity to say, "I hate you." You don't have it. That is how dehumanized we are. We are so dehumanized, we cannot say, "Yes, we hate you for what you have done to us." Can't say it. Can't say it.
In the beginning of 1968, after selling Mao's Red Book to university students in order to buy shotguns, the party makes the book required reading. Meanwhile, the FBI, under J. Edgar Hoover, begins a program called Counterintelligence Pro to break up the spreading unity of revolutionary groups that had begun solidifying throughout the work an example of the Panthers, the Peace and Freedom Party, Brown Berets, Students for a Democratic Society, the SNCC, the SCLC, Poor People's March, Cesar Chavez and others in the farm labor movement, the American Indian movement, Young Puerto Rican Brothers, the Young Lords, and many others. To destroy the party, the FBI begins with a program of surgical assassinations, killing leading members of the party who they know cannot otherwise be subverted. Following these mass killings would be a series of arrests, followed by a program of psychological warfare designed to split the party both politically and morally through the use of espionage, provocateurs, and chemical warfare. U.S. police terror and repression. On April 6, 1968, in West Oakland, Bobby Hutton, 17 years old, is shot dead by Oakland police. In a 90-minute gun battle, an unarmed Bobby Hutton is shot 10 times dead after his house is set ablaze and he is forced to run out into a fire of bullets. Just 2 days earlier, Martin Luther King was assassinated after he had begun rethinking his own doctrines of nonviolence and started to build ties with radical unions. 2 months later, on the day of Bobby's death, Robert Kennedy, widely recognized in the minority community as one of the only politicians in the U.S. sympathetic to the civil rights movement, is also assassinated. In January 1969, the first Panthers Free Breakfast for School Children program is initiated at St. Augustine's Church in Oakland. By the end of the year, the Panthers set up kitchens in cities across the nation, feeding over 10,000 children every day before they went to school.
How old are you?
9 years old. 7, 8, 5, 11, 10, 7, 6, 5.
If you didn't come here for breakfast, would you be getting the same kind of good breakfast at home?
No.
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 How do you feel about having breakfast here with the Black Panthers every morning?
Just feel good, like come down here with my friends.
I just come down here because I be eating, but I don't eat enough at home.
I'm just going to say it in one word. It's beautiful.
I like it.
That's all I can say.
It's just great. It's just great, too.
The United States government has set forth basic requirements for a healthy breakfast. The Black Panther Party, operating without government funds, has established a nationwide free breakfast for children program. It far exceeds the federal nutrition guidelines. This is Jeff Kamen reporting, Revolution for Breakfast. It is 7:45 in the morning in the Watts Ghetto of Los Angeles. Without prompting, these little girls have decided to sing a song during breakfast at a Black Panther community center.
The concept of the breakfast program originated with Huey. He thought that was one of the better ways to educate people in terms of what socialism was, what it was like, and also it served one of the basic needs of the people because that's part of our 10-point program platform. As to what we think, based on a poll taken in the Black community, that people need and desire, so we decided to implement the breakfast programs.
That is Joan Kelly. 20-year-old national coordinator of the Black Panther Party's free breakfast program.
We serve somewhere between 10 and 15,000 children daily on the breakfast program. So I would say 10,000 in all the chapters and branches.
A few months later, J. Edgar Hoover publicly states that the Panthers are the greatest threat to the internal security of the country. In Chicago, the outstanding leader of the Panthers local, Fred Hampton, leads 5 different breakfast programs on the West Side, helps create a free medical center, and initiates a door-to-door program of health services which test for sickle cell anemia and encourages blood drives for the Cook County Hospital. The Chicago Party also begins reaching out to local gangs to clean up their acts, get them away from crime, and bring them into the class war. The party's efforts meet wide success, and Hampton's audiences, an organized contingent, grows by the day. On December 4th, at 4 a.m. in the morning, thanks to information by an FBI informant, Chicago police raid the Panther's Chicago apartment, murdering Fred Hampton while he sleeps in bed. He is shot twice in the head, once in the arm and shoulder, while 3 other people sleeping in the same bed escape unharmed. Mark Clark, sleeping in the living room chair, is also murdered while asleep. Hampton's wife, carrying child for 8 months, is also shot but survives. 4 Panthers sleeping in the apartment are wounded, while 1 other escapes injury. Fred Hampton was 21 years old when he was executed by the state. Mark was 17 years old. According to the findings of the federal grand jury, 90 bullets were fired inside the apartment. 1 came from a Panther, Mark, who slept with a shotgun in his hand. All surviving Panther members were arrested for attempted murder of the police and aggravated assault. Not a single cop spent a moment in jail for the executions. Summer of 1969, the alliance between the Panthers and the SNCC begins ripping apart. One of the main points of dispute is the inclusion of whites in the struggle for minority liberation, a dispute which is pushed into an open gunfight at the University of California in Los Angeles against the group US. Which leaves 2 Panthers dead. In September, in the government's courthouse, Huey Newton is convicted of voluntary manslaughter and sentenced to 2 to 15 years in prison. By 1970, the conviction is appealed and overturned on procedural errors. On November 24, 1968, Kathleen and Eldridge Cleaver flee the U.S. They visit Cuba, then Paris, and eventually settle in Algeria. Earlier in the year, Cleaver published his famous book, Soul on Ice. By the end of the year, the party has swelled from 400 members to over 5,000 members in 45 chapters and branches, with a newspaper circulation of 100,000 copies. In 1969, Seal is indicted in Chicago for protesting during the Democratic National Convention of last year. The court refuses to allow Seal to choose a lawyer, as Seal repeatedly stands up during the show trial, insisting that he is being denied his constitutional right to counsel. The judge orders him bound and gagged. He is convicted on 16 counts of contempt and sentenced to 4 years in prison. While in jail, he would be charged again for killing a cop in years past. A trial that would end in 1971 with a hung jury. In March 1970, Bobby Seale publishes Seize the Time while still being held in prison. The story of the Panthers and Huey Newton. On April 2nd, 1970, in New York, 21 Panthers are charged with plotting to assassinate police officers and blow up buildings. On May 22nd, 8 members, including Erica Huggins, are arrested on a variety of conspiracy and murder charges in New Haven, Connecticut. Meanwhile, Chief of Staff David Hilliard is on trial for threatening President Richard Nixon. The party does little to separate its legal and illegal aspects, and is thus always and everywhere under attack by the government. In 1971, the Panthers' newspaper circulation reaches 250,000. On Huey Newton's release from prison, he devotes more effort to further develop the Panthers' socialist survival programs in black communities. Programs that provided free breakfasts for children, established free medical clinics, helped the homeless find housing, and gave away free clothing and food. FBI forgery, provocation, and chemical war. In March 1970, the FBI begins to sow seeds of factionalism in the Black Panthers, in part by forging letters to members. Eldridge Cleaver is one of their main targets, living in exile in Algiers. They gradually convince him, with a steady stream of misinformation, that the Black Panther Party leadership is trying to remove him from power. Cleaver received stacks of forged FBI letters from supposed party members criticizing Newton's leadership and asking for Cleaver to take control. An example of such a forged letter, written using the name of Connie Matthews, Newton's personal secretary. "I know you have not been told what has been happening recently. Things around headquarters are dreadfully disorganized, with the comrade commander not making proper decisions. The newspaper is in shambles. No one knows who is in charge. The foreign department gets no support. Brothers and sisters are accused of all sorts of things. I am disturbed because I myself do not know which way to turn. If only you were here to inject some strength into the movement, or to give some advice. One of the two steps must be taken soon, and both are drastic. We must either get rid of the Supreme Commander or get rid of the disloyal members. Huey is really all we have right now, and we can't let him down, regardless of how poorly he is acting, unless you feel otherwise." Cleaver receives similarly forged letters across the spectrum, from groups outside the Panthers to Panthers themselves, from rank-and-file members to Elbert Big Man Howard, editor of the Black Panther. The split comes when Newton goes on to a TV talk show for an interview, while Cleaver is on the phone in Algiers. Cleaver expresses his absolute disdain for what has happened to the party, demands that David Hilliard be removed, and even attacks the breakfast program as reformist. Cleaver is expelled from the Central Committee and starts up his own Black Liberation Army. In 1973, Seale runs for mayor of Oakland. Though he receives 40% of the vote, he is defeated. The destroyed remnants of the party leadership. With such great struggles, seeing the party being ripped apart by factions and internal hatred, Huey, like many members, becomes disillusioned. He no longer wants to lead the party, though so many expect and demand otherwise, while he spins into a spiral of self-doubt. He becomes heavily dependent on cocaine, heroin, and other drugs, It is not clear that this was his own doing, and very probable the work of the FBI. Huey remarked in one of his public speeches in the 1980s, where he would often have brilliant clarity but then become entirely incoherent and rambling, that he was killing himself by reactionary suicide through the vices of drug addiction. On August 2, 1989, Newton is shot dead on the streets of Oakland in a drug dispute. Bobby Seale resigns from the party, while Elaine Brown takes the lead in continuing the Panther community programs. In the fall of 1975, Eldridge and Kathleen Cleaver return from exile as born-again Christians. In 1979, all charges against Cleaver are dropped after he bargains with the state and pleads guilty to assault in a 1968 shootout with the cops. He is put on 5 years probation. In the dimming years of his life, Cleaver assimilates a political outlook similar to Martin Luther King, engages in various business ventures, and becomes heavily addicted to cocaine. By the beginning of the 1980s, attacks on the party and internal degradation and divisions caused the party to fall apart. The leadership of the party has been absolutely smashed. Its rank and file constantly terrorized by the police. Many remaining Panthers were hunted down and killed in the following years, imprisoned on trumped-up charges, or forced to flee the United States. As Cleaver would later explain in an interview a year before his death, as it was, the U.S. government chopped off the head of the Black Liberation Movement and left the body there armed. That's why all these young bloods are out there now. They've got the rhetoric, but are without the political direction, and they've got the guns. Black Child's Pledge. I pledge allegiance to my black people. I pledge to develop my body and mind to the greatest extent possible. I will learn all that I can in order to give my best to my people in their struggle for liberation. I will keep myself physically fit, building a strong body free from drugs and other substances which weaken me and make me less capable of protecting myself, my family, and my black brothers and sisters. I will unselfishly share my knowledge and understanding with them in order to bring about change more quickly. I will discipline myself to direct my energies thoughtfully and constructively, rather than wasting them in idle hatred. I will train myself never to hurt or allow others to harm my black brothers and sisters, for I recognize that we need every black man, woman, and child to be physically, mentally, and psychologically strong. These principles I pledge to practice daily, and to teach them to others in order to unite my people. A Pledge from the Black Panther, October 26, 1968, by Shirley Williams. Further reading and links. A quote by Angela Davis in a PBS interview in 1998. We can't think narrowly about movements for black liberation, and we can't necessarily see this class division as simply a product or a certain strategy that black movements have developed for liberation. We have to look at, for example, the increasing globalization of capital, the whole system of transitional capitalism now which has an impact on black populations, that has, for example, eradicated large numbers of jobs that black people traditionally have been able to count upon, and created communities where the tax base is lost now as a result of corporations moving to the third world in order to discover cheap labor. This has been an audio recording of the Marxists Internet Archive, created in July of 2006 by Brian Bastian. The original text of this article was written and published on the archive in May of 2001 by Brian Bastian. Sources for this article include the book The War Against the Panthers by Huey P. Newton, the book The Black Panthers Speak by Philip S. Foner, the book Seize the Time by Bobby Seale. The sound recordings were derived from the UC Berkeley Library Social Activism Sound Recording Project, The Black Panther Party. These recordings have been used in this work per the legal doctrine of fair use. The first audio clip was from May 21st, 1968, an interview with Huey Newton in Oakland, Alameda County Jail, by Elsa Knight Thompson, the interviewer. Please note that this particular recording was heavily edited to reduce the time and solidify the content. The second recording was from February 17, 1968, during the Huey Newton birthday rally in Oakland. With 5,000 supporters in attendance, the speakers included H. Rapp Brown and Stokely Carmichael. The final recording was made in January 1969, and like all other recordings, was broadcast by the radio station KPFA.